Hey guys, you're listening to the coolest podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 36, entitled Hypnotizing the World, we chat with the world's greatest hypnotist, Dr. Dave Hill.
Hi, it's Justin Stenstrom from EliteManMagazine.com. Welcome to the Elite Man Podcast. Our guest today has performed over 6,000 hypnosis shows, has a doctorate in clinical hypnotherapy, and is considered by many to be the greatest hypnotist in the world. Dr. Dave Hill, thanks so much for coming on our show today.
You're very welcome, Justin, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Dave. Can you just tell our listeners, a little more about your background and how you became, the greatest hypnotist in the world?
Well, that's a great question. I've been doing hypnosis now for almost 35 years, and it was way back in the early 1980s. I used to be an investment banker with a company called E.F. Hutton. The young listeners won't know who that is, but the older folks will know it was one of the biggest and best investment banks on the street. I was in the town of Las Vegas. We were taking the Sahara Casino at the time public to raise money. I was the youngest member of the deal team. Everyone was at least 30 years older than me. I was a young man in my early 20s. And these guys went out to dinner, and I was stuck doing some due diligence work. And on my own, I walked past a showroom that had a hypnotist performing, never seen a hypnosis show, bought a ticket, could not believe it was real. The short end of the story is a year later I was a hypnotist. So that's how I got started. And I trained an entire year with a gentleman named Gil Boyne, who passed away a few years ago. I trained every single day in his office when he was doing therapy. And then on the weekends, we did shows and demonstrations, and that's how I learned.
That's awesome. Did you say that was like the first exposure you ever had to hypnosis, or did you kind of ever like maybe see it on TV or something, or have like kind of an influencer growing up, in that area?
The only thing I had seen about it on television was probably a Roadrunner or Bugs Bunny cartoon of the guy being a hypnotist. Other than that, I'd never seen it in person or had any interest in it at all. So that's really where it happened. What's interesting is just recently, just about a month ago, a gentleman by the name of Joe Frizzetti wrote a book about hypnosis and the power of suggestion and how it can help change an individual's life. The character in the book who does the transformation is David Christian, and the hypnotist in the book is a guy named Dr. Jefferson Paul. Now, it's a novel. He based the character Dr. Jefferson Paul off of my life, and it's actually 100% accurate, everything he talks about with Dr. Jefferson Paul, even though it's a novel.
Wow, that's awesome.
It's called Master or Servant, Lessons Learned at the Wisdom Cafe. I just got a copy of it last week and knew nothing about it until he published this. And his name's Joe, and the last name's Frizzetti, F-R-A-Z-Z-E-T-T-E, and it can be found at Amazon.com.
That's so cool.
That may be one of the reasons I'm considered the world's greatest hypnotist. Somebody just wrote a book about me. how's that?
That's really awesome. You didn't even know about it either.
Didn't even know about it until late last week, so...
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check that one out. Master or Servant.
And Master or Servant, Lessons Learned at the Wisdom Cafe. And then the author is Joe
Frizzetti.
Frizzetti, with two Z's and two T's.
All right, awesome. I'll definitely put that in the show notes as well, so our listeners can check that out. That sounds really
sure.
cool.
Sure, they'll enjoy it. It's a great book, and it's going to actually be a trilogy. There's two more that follow it. So.
Oh, nice. And does the main character kind of center around you?
The main character is the person who's undergoing the transformation. So his mentor is me, Dr. Jefferson Paul. So I'm in there a lot. So the lessons you can learn come from my life. So
cool. Nice.
Yeah, that's very cool. So, and if someone's looking to improve their life and understand how to use the power of the mind and hypnosis, this is a great book.
Awesome. Dave, obviously you saw, when you got into it, you saw a stage performance, stage hypnosis. It's also, it's very kind of different from clinical hypnosis. What about like the stage show that you saw kind of drew you into, you know, the performance of it and being in front of people and kind of putting on like a show form, even though it is real, at least from my understanding? What kind of drew you to that part?
Well, what intrigued me was it was just hard to believe that these people would do the things that the hypnotist suggested in such a quick and easy manner. So I couldn't understand how that would work. And that's what intrigued me about it. And then when I learned more about how hypnosis works, I became even more intrigued how it can help heal people. So it's really a two-pronged process that I learned from the curiosity of the show. I thought it was fake, so much so I was there in town for 3 days. The hypnotist had 2 shows every night. I went to all 6 shows when I was in town, trying to figure out how it was fake, and I couldn't figure it out.
And what are some of the more like remarkable things that that you've seen on like, or actually I should say probably have done yourself during stage hypnosis? Like, what are some of the things that kind of shock people or blow people's minds the most when you're up there like doing some of these hypnosis acts?
Yeah, so some of the things that blow people's mind the most is you might have someone who's volunteered that they all know from the audience, who's a very shy person, who may even suffer from the fear of public speaking. And yet when they come up on stage, they are the star of the show. So, for example, if you say in a moment you're going to become Michael Jackson performing Billie Jean, all of a sudden that person is doing this in front of a house of 500 or 1,000 people. And they know there is no way that person would do that. That's what blows their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, you pick someone out of the audience to come up on stage, and then at the end of the show, oftentimes I close the show by recreating the band Journey, and I turn somebody into the lead singer, and the person can actually sing.
Wow.
And they know the words to the song that they're singing, in which case what I use is Don't Stop Believing, and people cannot believe they could sing that song. So...
Wow.
It's more the contrast of what the audience finds unbelievable than what I find unbelievable, because I've learned anything can happen.
Mm-hmm. Now, you said they can, like for that example you gave about singing you know, the Journey song.
Sure.
You said they can actually sing. Do they actually become like a good singer? Like, does it sound good when they're
it sounds terrific.
Wow.
So that's the thing that is... especially if you have an older group there and a young guy singing or young gal singing the song, they don't think they know the song.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's before their time. So they don't understand how they can know it. So they
can actually know it without even, maybe if they really don't even know it, they would actually know the words still?
They know the words because they've heard it before. You see, that's the thing about hypnosis. In your subconscious mind, everything that's gone on in your life is programmed there and stored there. So it's a matter of learning how to retrieve that information. And oftentimes under the state of hypnosis, the retrieval of memory is enhanced.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it works. That's a simple explanation.
Yeah. There's so many, you know, kind of just fascinating topics I'd want to touch on. So,
sure,
you know,
fire away.
I'm kind of just, you know, jumping around here, but it's just, hypnosis is just so fascinating to me. So let's talk about, you know, the like rapid induction, like when you go on stage to perform and you get like a few audience guests, like how long does it actually take to hypnotize them? And like, what's the process? Like, what is actually like rapid induction, like putting them under, you know, really quick if you have to?
Sure. So All we're doing is we're altering their state to one of awareness. To, in hypnosis, it's a state of heightened awareness. So the first thing that would be good is just to lay a ground work for the folks listening. What is hypnosis? So they have a basic definition to work from. Then we can go through what happens. So all hypnosis is a state of extraordinary mental, physical, and psychological relaxation. And what that does is it makes the subconscious mind more suggestible to the non-critical acceptance of ideas, concepts, and information. So let's break that down in terms of a rapid induction. So the first thing that has to happen for me to hypnotize somebody in, say, 10, 15 seconds, and you can see an example of me hypnotizing three people in 15 seconds on Mythbusters, which we filmed back in 2007. The episode was Voice Flame Extinguisher, and I hypnotized Grant, Tori, and Carrie, the three sub-characters on that show, in 15 seconds. It's real time. The video's on my site, or they can watch the show. I had never met them before. So what happens here is the following. The first thing that has to be in place is the hypnotist needs to be of the belief and confidence that they can hypnotize the person in a short amount of time. That's one. Two, the people being hypnotized need to believe that the hypnotist can hypnotize them. Does that make sense, Justin?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because if either one is not confident of the fact of the other one, it won't happen.
Yep.
So let's say the person wants to get hypnotized, but the hypnotist is a new hypnotist or has never done a rapid induction. While that person who's being hypnotized is going to be aware they're not confident. And guess what happens?
Doesn't work.
It doesn't work. The second thing that has to happen is there needs to be an expectation of what will happen. So if I walk up to somebody and say, in a moment I'm going to relax you, when I do it will take less than a second, they need to expect what I just said will happen.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't, then there's no hypnosis. And so the reason that takes place is the non-critical acceptance of ideas, concepts, and information. We have a thing that's part of our aware mind, our conscious mind, which we call in hypnosis the critical factor. It's a filter or protective device that protects and filters information that goes into our subconscious. In order for someone to be hypnotized, that needs to be relaxed and out of the way. So that can simply be done by the fact that they've seen me before or know me or they want to be hypnotized real bad, that we're in rapport, meaning they know, like, and trust me, and they've sat that mechanism, that non-critical acceptance has been sat aside so that my suggestions will work right away. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, and then the last thing, and so that expectation, by the way, needs to be on both parts. The hypnotist has to expect what they do will hypnotize them. The person being hypnotized needs to expect it to happen. And then the last piece that needs to be there is what's called conviction. So there, you must be of the state of conviction on both sides that this will happen. If all of that's in place, it will happen.
Okay, so do you kind of...
And that's really what we call the hypnotic formula, which most hypnotists will not be aware of, just so you know.
Yeah, and so is that for all hypnosis or just specifically the, like, rapid induction hypnosis?
That needs to be in place for all hypnosis to work.
Okay, yep.
So what happens in a rapid fire is it's just... There are certain techniques or strategies you can use to hypnotize somebody quickly.
Yep.
So you will see some techniques I use in Mythbusters. There's another video on my site next to it on the homepage where I'm on a different television show, and I hypnotize some people rapidly as well using a little bit different technique. And these are all people I've never met. These were all done in one take, just so you know. They weren't staged or anything like that. They're all one take.
That kind of brings an important kind of question to mind then. If, like, if you haven't met these people and they are critical of you, like, say, you're on Mythbusters and they're trying to, kind of prove you wrong or see if, like, different things are fake, then how could that work if they are, like, kind of critical and not really?
Yeah, it wouldn't work. So I would just simply tell them, if you're here to prove me wrong, that I can't hypnotize you in 10 or 15 seconds, mm-hmm. you're right.
Okay. Same thing on stage too.
Same thing on stage too. There will be people that come to any stage show, whether you see them at a state fair, you go to a Las Vegas show or a nightclub show, comedy club show around the country. There will be people in the audience that will come up on stage to prove that the hypnotist can't hypnotize them. And the experienced hypnotist will get rid of them in a polite way because it just won't happen. You can't hypnotize everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like in a cartoon or a movie where you can just walk up to somebody and snap your fingers and that's what happens. They have to want to be hypnotized. Now, the person who is a skeptic, though, can be turned around with some conversation, but you need some time to do that.
When you, I've seen like some of your videos on YouTube, and I saw the Mythbusters, and
right.
Do people like actually go to sleep when you tell them to go to sleep, and they're actually like, are they like legitimately in sleep state?
That's a great question. So they're not asleep. What they are is in a state. The best way to liken it is like a state of daydream. Mm-hmm. They're aware of everything going around them, but they're so relaxed it just feels good to stay relaxed.
Okay.
Because if they were asleep, then when we give them a suggestion, what's going to happen?
They're just not going to get it.
Nothing. They'll be, and you will see those people in shows, by the way. They might be some people, the hypnotist gives a suggestion that they're on a hot day at a beach and it's getting really hot out and people are fanning and waving themselves that are responding to the suggestion. There could be one or two people on the stage there that don't respond. They just sit there, but they're very relaxed. You see their eyes closed. They're slumped over. They're in what we call a hypnotic coma. And what that simply means is it just feels so good for them to relax that they don't want to respond to anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So for a skit or two, that's funny because it's in contrast to what the other people are doing, and you can educate the audience and point it out. But you don't want to leave them there on stage. You're going to want to wake those people up and send them back to the audience.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to do anything. So.
Yeah.
That's a great question. So they're not asleep. They're in a state of awareness.
Okay. Yeah, it makes
sleep
more
is
sense.
Like a shorthand we use to just tell them to relax.
Yeah, gotcha. And it probably kind of adds more effect too for the audience, I'm sure.
It's part of the illusion of the stage show.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything about the stage show that maybe isn't real, like that isn't really like hypnosis, but more for like the act or show of it?
In my show, not the case. Everything I do is real and part of hypnosis because I want the audience to be educated on what happens
mm-hmm.
from start to finish. Now, there are other hypnotists around the country and around the world who use shills and people who are not hypnotized. I will not name names, but there are those out there that will use people who aren't hypnotized to enhance their show, and they shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
It's not necessary.
Gotcha. After performing, 6,000 hypnosis shows, Dave, I'm sure you're, a master expert at performing and being in front of a crowd and kind of just giving a great show. How did you actually build yourself up to that point? And, how did you perfect, the art of performing and being in front of other people like that?
Well, the way you perfect that is by failing as uh-huh. much as you can. So, the very first show I did was at a VA center down in Los Angeles, where it turned out all of the people who were going to be in the show and attending the show were in wheelchairs.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't know that at the time. I went in to set up the sound system and set everything up, and I then asked where the chairs were for the volunteers, and the person who I had booked the show with there told me that they're bringing their own chairs.
Mm-hmm.
And in wheeled 300 VA vets
in
their wheelchairs. Now, you have to know in my mind, I'm in my early 20s, I have skits in my mind that I'm going to do where they have to move around on their feet.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not going to happen here.
Yeah.
So I had to quickly adapt what I was going to do to them. And we still had a successful show. Another show I did a long time ago was I went to a home back when I was married. My wife came with me, and the people, this was when I lived down in San Diego, they had told me they lived in a very large house, and they were going to have about 300 people at the house. Well, I showed up at the home. There was no way the home could hold that many people. In fact, it turned out there was about 30 people there. So they had lied to me. The show turned out to be done in their garage.
Wow.
We put 6 folding chairs across the garage. I have video somewhere. You can still see my wife has set up our sound equipment on the washer and dryer. Okay. Now, to compound it worse, this was a group of people from the country, India, and from Pakistan. And they didn't speak very good English.
Oh, man.
So we still made the show work. And even at that show, I used to teach someone under hypnosis to eat fire. So I used that as the close there, and I had somebody eat fire under hypnosis. They had a great time. But it was a very difficult show. Was it a great show? No. To them, it was. Because the guy ate fire, and that's all they remember. but it was brutal. So the way you learn to perform, the way you learn to do anything is, you know, there's a little saying, there's no shortcuts.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have to do is you have to put together a plan and go out there and execute your plan.
Yep.
And you have to fail many, many times to get better. Meaning you're going to, in the hypnosis world, if you're doing a show, you're going to try certain skits out. They don't work too good. Why do they not work too good? You're having the wrong person do them, or you're instructing them how to do them wrong, or you have the wrong audience for that skit.
Yeah.
It'll also happen because you haven't properly hypnotized everybody up there on stage, and you're keeping people who aren't hypnotized that should be back into the audience. And a lot of things like that you have to learn. There's lots of little nuances. You might have the wrong sound system.
Mm-hmm.
You oftentimes, as a hypnotist, will do shows in a hotel, and they may not have their, when they start out, a sound system, so they're going to use the one in the hotel, and the hotel will have the speakers in the ceilings. Well, that's a terrible sound system for a hypnosis show. It might be fun if you're narrating or hosting an event so everyone in the room can hear it, but for a hypnosis show, you need speakers that the volunteers can hear specifically, your voice and instructions, and the ones overhead in the hotel are not conducive to that. But mm-hmm. those are things you learn if you're trained properly and you make the mistakes.
Okay, I think this is the perfect time to take a quick break from our show to let you know about our Kickstarter campaign going on right now. If you go to Kickstarter.com and type in the words Elite Man Conference, you'll see our Kickstarter campaign pop right up. Again, that's Elite Man Conference. We're trying to have an Elite Man Conference this fall. All the best experts from the podcast coming to one event. So basically 30 to 40 of the world's best self-help experts in the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, dating, psychology, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. This will be a 3-day event in Boston this fall if we can get our goal. So check it out right now. If you can back it, please do so. All donations are greatly appreciated, and you'll help make this Elite Man Conference come to life. So again, it's Kickstarter.com and Elite Man Conference. You can also click right in the description and show notes, as we're going to have a link to the Kickstarter page. So please pause the episode right now and check it out. So for those of you who did pause the episode and are replaying it, and for those of you who did not, we are back to the show now.
Dave, have you ever used hypnosis on yourself, like self-hypnosis, to kind of improve different areas, maybe even like your performance or like confidence on stage?
Of course. I use it every single day.
Oh, every single day?
Every day I do self-hypnosis.
What types of things have you done for self-improvement anyways?
So there are many things you do. So some of the ones I've used over the years are, one is self-confidence as a hypnotist, meaning I'm going to be confident that what I do will work, whether it's a show or therapy, because often people don't know I had a therapy office for over 20 years and saw thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is to improve your confidence as a negotiator. Why would you want that? Because you're going to negotiate contracts for shows. So you want to become skillful at that. You might also want to I've done sales training. I've written a book about sales training. So that would be another one. You might want to use one to improve your health. There was a time I had come down with pneumonia. I ended up in the hospital for 3 days. So you want to use self-hypnosis to improve your health.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of things like that you can use. There's no one topic that's best. It's what might be best for you at the time you're working on something.
Yep. I personally used self-hypnosis, like CDs and stuff, for anxiety, mm-hmm. confidence. You know, I was getting panic attacks. It helped me overcome that. Even actually, I was depressed years ago. You know, I had, like, going through high school, going through the anxiety and stuff. I had some depression, and it really helped me with getting over that, too. So, I mean, I know firsthand how helpful that can actually be. Do you listen to yourself when you're doing these things, or do you kind of listen to maybe another colleague or something for self-hypnosis?
Sure. So, you know, when I started out doing self-hypnosis, the stuff I listened to was everything that Gil Boyne had put out,
mm-hmm.
Because he was my mentor at the time. After that, I learned to do self-hypnosis where I didn't have to listen to anyone. I could fill my own mind with my own thoughts. There are some other types of self-hypnosis that's out there that's very good. There's the Mind Enhancement series that Richard Bandler did that's very, very good.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the HPP hypnosis tapes that Dr. Lloyd Globerman has done, and those are excellent as well.
And have you ever tried, the reading thing, like where you read the hypnosis script and kind of hypnotize yourself from that? Or is it more just like listening to it like on audio? Or can you actually kind of say things maybe in your head
Yeah, you can learn to say things in your head. The stuff where you read to go into self-hypnosis doesn't work too well.
Mm-hmm.
What that will help you is to construct what to say in your mind. What you really need to be taught is how to go into self-hypnosis so you know how it feels. And once you're confident that you can do that, then you need to learn how do you program your mind while you're in self-hypnosis. So oftentimes those written scripts for self-hypnosis are great to pull the key points you want to go over as suggestions in your mind
mm-hmm.
when you're there. But reading to go into self-hypnosis, in my opinion, will not work.
Okay. So do you use the latter, just like kind of talking in your head?
That's right.
Okay.
That's what I do now. That, you know, I've evolved from where I listen to someone
mm-hmm.
to everything I do is myself.
Gotcha.
And, you know, before I do my own session, I will think about what I'm going to program my mind with.
And how much time each day do you kind of spend on doing self-hypnosis?
25 minutes every day.
Okay.
It's one of the things I always do.
And if you're trying to work on something new, like say you had a new kind of issue you wanted to tackle, how long would it take to actually like see results from that if you were doing that every day and starting something new?
So if you know what you're doing, you should start to get results after the first session.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't know what you're doing or not sure of it, it's going to take longer, or it may never happen.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yep, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard somewhere that it takes like 30 days or something, or 20, maybe 21 days for your subconscious to really get a hold of it. But I mean, I'm not really sure if that has any credence.
Sure. Well, people will say it takes 21 days to create a habit or 30 days to create a habit. And to me, that's all nonsense. And here's why.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is a smoker, the first time they picked up a cigarette and started smoking, how long did it take to create that habit?
The first time.
One cigarette,
yeah.
Right? So how long does it take to create a habit?
Just one thing, I guess, one time.
Instantly.
Yeah.
So what happens, though, is from habit to lifestyle is what you're trying to do. You're trying to change your lifestyle to go from smoker to non-smoker. So there's an art, if you're doing hypnotherapy, to help someone become a non-smoker, and you can't help everyone stop smoking. It's just, if it were true, there'd be a lineup around every hypnotist's office who did smoking cessation.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to get people to believe what we just talked about, which is the habit begins right away.
Sure. Dave, you've mentioned some of the things you've done for rapid hypnosis, like the memory, and then you also, like on the TV show, and then also having people be able to like get good at singing like a song like Journey and it actually sounds good.
Sure.
Is it possible to hypnotize people in rapid hypnosis and then have them keep whatever suggestions you gave them further?
Yes.
Like make somebody a good singer for life, I guess.
Well, you stage it up, so you'd have to work with them over a period of time. But the point is, can you do rapid hypnosis and then give them a suggestion for positive change? And the answer is yes. So, you know, when someone used to see me for therapy, the first time I'd meet with them, I might take 5-10 minutes to put them into a hypnotic trance before we did the therapy. But when they would come in for the second, third, or fourth session, it would be 10, 15 seconds for them to go into trance. And the reason is I want to spend the rest of the time I'm with them doing the work to help them improve their life.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm spending the entire session putting them into hypnosis, well, that's a complete waste of time.
Yeah.
The only one making money there is the hypnotist.
And how long is the session to actually, you know,
be effective? Typical session when I worked would be from an hour to an hour and a half. It just would depend upon the issue we were working on. Some sessions could be as short as 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Dave, as far as like the memory, you know, hypnosis, because that's just such a interesting topic to me. Would this, could this potentially help like, you know, people with like Alzheimer's or other dementia forms, you know, even Parkinson's when they kind of start to have the memory issues and stuff for kind of chronic diseases like that? Would that be effective?
Well, for certain things, there are things that hypnosis can't do anything with. So if it's Alzheimer's or dementia, we're not going to be able to do much with that because that's a medical problem, and it's really too late for hypnosis to intervene there.
Mm-hmm.
However, okay. Parkinson's is a little bit different. What's interesting about Parkinson's is there's been a number of studies where you can work with somebody with Parkinson's, and you can teach them to slow down the tremors in their body parts using hypnosis and then teaching them self-hypnosis. Using, for example, that there's a switch they can turn on or off to reduce the tremors. And there's well-documented work from Gil Boyne to others. You can actually see on video of this actually working.
That's really incredible.
Yeah, it really depends on the issue. So hypnosis is not a cure-all for everything. It works well with certain subjects, and with others it doesn't work at all.
Okay. You mentioned some of the, you know, some of the things it can't do. Are there any other limitations or maybe misconceptions about hypnosis that, you know, people kind of assume or generally think about what it can and can't do?
Oh, sure. So, you know, let me go over some common reasons people contact me for hypnosis. One common one is someone breaks up with someone and they want to erase the memory of that person from their mind. Using hypnosis, that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to erase the memory of that person from your mind. You want to learn lessons from that relationship.
Yeah.
They're just in so much pain, they don't know how to cope with it. So rather than teaching them hypnosis to erase something from their mind, you want to teach them how to use hypnosis and how life works with relationships. It's a different session.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Or they may say, hey, Dr. Dave, could you secretly hypnotize my boyfriend when he's with the girl he's cheating on with me so he falls out of love with her and he falls back in love with me? And I know you can do that if you just sit across the lunch table from him. Well, that's not going to happen either. Or I've had people bring people to my office who were paralyzed and they wanted me to hypnotize them so they could walk again. Again, that's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it all seems like pretty, you know, outrageous kind of, I mean, definitely reasonable if you're that person, you really want something to happen, you're not knowledgeable about what hypnosis can do, but it just kind of seems, you know, far-fetched in some of the claims.
In looking at it rationally, it seems far-fetched, but, you know, in their mind, they see a hypnotist do a show. You know, and they make people do things instantly so it looks miraculous. So they think you have tremendous power. And you don't have tremendous power. the people who are responding to the suggestions are in control at all times. They're the ones with the power.
Yep.
So, and they want to fix something in their life so bad that they believe that you can do it. So, you know, part of it is just educating them in a polite way that you cannot help them with this. And sometimes it's emotional for them because you might be their last resort.
Mm-hmm.
Someone might come to you because they have lung cancer or pancreatic cancer, and they think you can hypnotize them to reprogram their mind and put cancer-killing thoughts and into their mind that they can send to their bloodstream and kill all the cancer out. Not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are medical impossibilities that we can't do. But if someone just got diagnosed with cancer and has a good chance to live, well, then that type of therapy could help.
Sure.
So it just depends. And the hypnotist needs to be moral and ethical with the people they're working with to let them know what they can and can't do.
What are some of the more remarkable things that it actually can do? Like, for instance, like you mentioned, like someone getting diagnosed with cancer. I'm sure hypnosis could be used for something like maybe boosting your immune system or boosting your feelings towards having cancer, and maybe giving you a general better stress relief kind of thing. What are some of the other remarkable things that you've seen and done with hypnosis?
I personally used hypnosis where we've helped someone stop having asthma attacks, stop having allergic reactions to certain things.
Mm-hmm.
I helped a 12-year-old boy who was still wearing diapers because he couldn't control himself, especially when he would sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
In one session, we did a session with him, and he never lost control again. And he had seen all sorts of medical doctors for this, so it changed his life entirely. You can help someone who has a phobia of needles and they need to get a shot. And that can be done in 10, 15 minutes, sometimes mm-hmm. less. You can help someone who is facing severe illness by teaching them how to deal with anxiety, because that's really the main thing you have to do, is be calm while you're facing what you're going through, and that may change the outcome. Can it demonstrably boost the immune system? There are studies that show it doesn't work and it does work.
Mm-hmm.
But hard to know.
Yeah.
You can help someone stop smoking. You can help someone stop using drugs. All of those things are miracles to them.
Weight loss.
You can help with weight loss if it's done in a moral and ethical fashion.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes weight is put on because of a traumatic event in someone's life. And if you can heal that trauma, their need for food to numb the pain goes away and they'll lose the weight. If it's just someone who needs to lose weight and they don't have that trauma in their life, the moral and ethical way to do it is to make sure they're not a diabetic, make sure they don't have a thyroid issue that's causing their metabolism to run low. Make sure they have a real eating plan. Make sure they have a plan to move every day and exercise. Because without that, no matter what hypnosis you do, it won't work.
Gotcha.
So weight is a catch-22. It has to be done properly.
Okay. Dave, what do you see as the future of hypnosis? Like, do you think everything that can be done, or all the practical uses of hypnosis and applications of it, have kind of already been discovered? Or do you think there's more out there? And what do you think maybe the future holds for hypnosis?
Well, I think there's always a lot more things that hypnosis can do, because there's going to be a lot of creative people who have the knowledge to do things that some other people couldn't do. What will they be involved with? I think there'll be lots of things in terms of health that hypnosis can do. And in the future would be having hypnosis become recognized by health insurance,
mm-hmm.
because it doesn't pay for hypnosis sessions unless it's done through a medical provider or psychologist in most states. So, I mean, the two things that hypnosis can really help people with is smoking and phobia. And it should be recognized by insurance companies around the country so that people could go to a hypnotist and get help with that. It usually takes 1 to 3 sessions at the most in either case, whether it's to stop smoking or remove a phobia. A lot less expensive. There's no drugs involved. They don't have to go 50 weeks a year to a psychiatrist. They don't have to get a prescription to some anti-anxiety pill in the case of phobia. And they'll be able to live their life in a very good way.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a great thing in the future.
For sure. Actually, kind of just reminded me of another topic, pain management. How does hypnosis work as far as that? Is it generally very good for pain management or not?
It's very effective for pain management. However, there is a couple of key points that need to be understood about pain management. One is there's a reason the body has pain. And so for the lay hypnotist who's not a medical doctor who's going to work with somebody, they need to get a medical referral from the attending physician to make sure it's okay to use hypnotic conditioning with the client. Because if we mask the pain using hypnosis, we could actually injure the person.
Mm-hmm.
So the example I always like to give is somebody says, "Hey, Dr. Dave, I have a headache. Can you get rid of it?" Sure, there's a way to do that. Now, let's say the reason they have the headache is because they have a brain tumor. It hasn't been diagnosed yet.
Yep.
What have we done?
Hidden the brain tumor.
Yeah, we haven't helped the person. So we want to know what the reason is for pain. And what hypnosis really is, teaching somebody self-hypnosis and using hypnotherapy, it's a way to teach somebody what's called a distraction method so that there's no pain at the time they're in the most pain. And the way to understand that is we've all cut our finger, for example. It might be in the kitchen cutting vegetables or slicing onions or something like that, and you cut yourself. Well, if you're in a conversation with somebody and you don't realize it right away, there's no pain.
Sure.
But somebody says, "Hey, you just cut yourself," and then you look at the cut, then what happens? Then there's pain.
Yep.
Because you're now aware of what just took place.
Yeah, it's a good
point. So, I mean, the place where all of this is thrown out the window is you are driving along the road, and there's an auto accident. And you're a hypnotist, you get out of the car to help, and somebody's in severe pain, and they're waiting for the ambulance to show up. Well, there, go right ahead and use the hypnosis to distract them from the pain.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's nothing else that will work until help arrives.
Dave, just a few couple more questions left, and then
sure. You
got to kind of wrap things up. It's been really fun and interesting, though, so I do thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
Dave, what would you describe, the subconscious mind as? Do you think it actually is a place, like a part of the brain? Do you think there's actually a location in the brain for the subconscious mind, or is it more of like sort of kind of like some energy or something that exists in all of us?
I would liken it to, my belief is we have two minds. We have an aware mind, which is our conscious mind, and then we have our subconscious mind, where everything else is. So the breakdown is like this. The conscious mind, your aware mind, only does 4 things. It analyzes information. It takes that information and it uses rationale to create a reason for why it believes that. It's the place where willpower is stored, and it's the location of temporary memory. The subconscious accepts all the information that it receives, good or bad, from the day you were born, and some people may believe in past lives or a soul, so even before then. It's the location of all your permanent memory. It stores all your habits, both good and bad, in what we call utilitarian. Utilitarian being breathing, blood flowing, eyelids blinking, closing, sweating, all those things that happen automatically. A lot of those utilitarian habits are things you do when you drive a car today. drive a car today, you can eat, be on the phone, you can use the GPS, you can text, you can do all sorts of things you couldn't do when you first learned to drive a car because they all became a habit.
Mm-hmm.
It's the seat of all your emotions, and it's also your protective mind. It protects you against both real and imagined danger.
Okay.
And it's my belief that when the conscious and subconscious mind work together, you can literally do anything. That's when miracles take place. When they're in conflict, that's when problems and challenges occur in your life.
Makes sense. Do you believe in some of those like hypnosis sessions with like past life regression and all that stuff, or is that kind of just something that, you know, is far-fetched, or I don't really know what your thoughts are on that?
Well, I don't have a pro or con view because I'm not a smart enough guy to know whether what I'm seeing is real or not.
Okay.
But I have seen people go back into past lives. But you have to understand, when I'm doing a session like that and we're using regression therapy to help somebody heal, I'm just taking the information they give me, whether it's true or not in real life, to heal them.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it happened or not, I don't know. I personally, if I were to give you a belief, I don't think it happened. I think they may have read a book, movie, thought process causes them to believe they went there. And because they believe they were there, it's true for them,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Sure, false memory.
Yeah, it's a false memory. But could they have actually been from there? I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know that. I don't think so. But if you sit there and see it happen, you're not sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't judge what happens. I just take the information to help heal them.
Gotcha. Sure. Dave, what is your biggest professional accomplishment? What are you most proud of that you've done?
It's just simply helping people with hypnotherapy to improve their lives. So I mean, if I take some of the biggest accomplishments I had would be the 12-year-old boy who had to wear diapers.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw him, he was in his Little League uniform. I can only imagine how embarrassed he must feel knowing he has to wear those to go play a Little League game.
Yeah.
And knowing that after we met one time, he never had to do that again.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big feeling. Another one would be I helped a lady lose 150 pounds, but I only saw her one time, and I did the session for free. And it turned out she didn't bring in her blood test with her. I asked her to bring it in because I wanted to know whether she had a thyroid problem or not. Well, she never had the blood test. She lied to me. And because she lied to me, I told her I couldn't work with her. She broke down in my office.
Mm-hmm.
6 months later, though, I got a card Christmas time because she saw me around June, where she had written me a note that she had lost 80 pounds and that she had gone to her doctor and her thyroid was a little off, which when women say that, it means a lot, off. And over the period of 2 years, because she got on the right medication, and she got an exercise program and a lifestyle change in how she ate, she lost 150 pounds. Without my help using hypnosis, my help was just really beating her up,
mm-hmm.
About not being honest about herself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are things that are memorable to me.
Sure. Those are really, really great memories to have, and kind of, I guess I can only imagine how much, kind of happiness it brings you to think back on some of the things that you've helped people with, especially with your hypnotherapy and, you know, all those sessions of helping people who really have like these important or kind of terrible, I guess, kind of struggles that they're going with.
Yeah, those are the things that I remember the most. So, me, a show is a show. There's always funny moments from a show.
Mm-hmm.
There's shows where you feel you had a great time, but there's no better feeling than helping another human being improve their life.
Dave, it's been a really great chat. Is there any last takeaway message you'd like to leave our audience or send off?
It would just simply be, remember, you can do anything you want to do if you decide to do it.
Awesome. And is there a place that our listeners can check you out?
Sure. They can go to my website, which is really easy to remember. It's simply drdavehill.com. drdavehill.com.
Guys, check that out. It's drdavehill.com. Dave, it's been such a great pleasure having you on today, man. I really do appreciate the great advice and all the fascinating stories you brought our show today. So again, thank you so much and take care.
You're very welcome. Have a great weekend.